Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
All right, welcome to an abbreviated edition of the Saints Happy Hour podcast. It is Christmas Eve, so we are going to give you a show, but it's going to be quick. As always, we are sponsored by JLD Hot Sauces and Knives. Guys, it's too late for Christmas, but it's not too late to give the person you love either hot sauce, or they have great knives for hunting and fishing and cooking. They have Boot Jolica. I know I'm pronouncing it wrong.
Jolokia.
They have Thai flavors. They have the ghost pepper madness. It's the shot in a 1 ounce bottle. It'll melt your face. Look, if you screwed up and you didn't get somebody for something for Christmas, get them a knife. Get them some hot sauce. They'll still love you. Go to jldsharpsauce.com. Use the code SAINTS. Get 10% off today. Once again, that's jldsharpsauce.com. All right. We only have Dave for 10 minutes. Dave, the Saints are 13-2. I thought yesterday, and I'm not just saying this because the Saints won. I'd have probably said this if they had lost, too. I think yesterday was the best football game of the year in the NFL. People wouldn't think it was better than maybe the Kansas City Rams game on Monday night when they both scored 50. But yesterday was a great freaking football game. It was back and forth. It was wild. What are your thoughts on the game yesterday? And how much did you drink?
I mean, you know, Andrew texted me earlier today. He was at the game too. And I think he probably would have the same things to say as me as far as the atmosphere in the dome. Steelers fans always travel the best. There are always lots of them in the dome for these games. There's always lots of terrible towels. It is always so large that you can actually hear it. You know, when the Steelers do something good or something goes the Steelers' way, there, you know, it's audible as far as hearing all of their fans cheer. You know, it was a great game. It was just, like you said, it was back and forth. You know, to me, it was just kind of like whoever has the ball last is who's going to win, is going to win the game. That's kind of how I felt. Even when the Saints were winning, I always kind of, you know, in the fourth quarter, I always kind of felt that, you know, Pittsburgh was definitely going to score and the Saints were going to have to do something, at the end of the game to win the game. Obviously Drew Brees, led the team for a final score, and then Sheldon Rankins comes up with the big forced fumble. You know, that's one of the things I'd like to say. You know, these fumbles, you know, I think Underhill kind of mentioned it in one of his articles after the game yesterday or this morning or whatever. I mean the Saints aren't getting lucky, you know, with these turnovers and with these fumbles. You know, they're not just getting lucky at the end of the game like this. Like this Dennis Allen and the defense, I mean, they have been focusing on it, just like in the 2009 season with Greg Williams. I mean, the Saints got all those turnovers.
Well, forcing a fumble,
because they were forcing
a fumble is a skill. Recovering a fumble is luck.
Absolutely, absolutely. But the Saints have the ability and do a great job of getting the ball out and onto the ground and getting themselves, giving themselves those chances. And it was a focus back in 2009 with Greg Williams, and I think that showed. And it was a focus, it's focused this year. You know, and like Lattimore said in a post-game interview, you know, they're not really getting the interceptions. 2009, we had a lot of interceptions. We had Darren Sharper, a lot of pick sixes. We're not getting so many interceptions. But we are doing the Saints defense is doing a good job with the fumbles. The other thing I would say, PJ Williams, I thought quietly he has been playing very well the last few games. Obviously, yesterday I thought he played awesome. He came up with some big plays.
He's going to make a ton of money this offseason. And we're going to look. You can laugh all you want. Somebody is going to pay him.
It's true. I get it.
Somebody's going to pay him $25 to $35 million to be their third corner.
Yeah, I feel like they got out of PJ Williams what they were paying Patrick Robinson to be this
year. Right. They did. Andrew, I mentioned it on my Channel 4 morning interview today as a joke, but I felt like the thing that might be most impressive about yesterday is Pittsburgh, clearly, when they got down 10, they had a desperation about their season that the Saints – they couldn't match it because the Saints, yeah, they're playing for home field, but you can't match a team that's playing for their playoff lives. You can't match that desperation. I felt Pittsburgh was the more desperate. They ratcheted up the intensity. Roethlisberger and Antonio Brown were fucking amazing, and it didn't matter. The Saints won anyway, and Pittsburgh, I thought, outcoached the Saints completely on offense. They had a fantastic plan, and it didn't matter. And yeah, the Saints got a bunch of breaks and whatever, but to do that when you are playing the more desperate team and you got outcoached and you won anyway, like, this Saints team, it's the most complete team that I've ever seen.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard a lot of Steelers fans basically blaming the refs on the game, but I just rewatched the whole game because, you know, a lot of times when you watch it live in person, it's just hard to get a feel for, you know, how the game goes versus, you know, watching it on tape a second time. And I mean, it's just different on a broadcast versus in person. You miss a lot of stuff in person. But I just felt like, besides the Kamara pass on fourth and one, that was a phantom flag and ridiculous, and it shouldn't have been pass interference. But, you know, other than that, I mean, there were several calls that went the Steelers' way. I felt like this officiating crew in general were kind of flag heavy. They were flag happy with the interference stuff. Like, if it was a questionable, or, you know, if there's a little bit of contact, they usually err on the side of throwing the flag, which I don't like personally. But I thought, like, the Michael Thomas on fourth and two, like, the contact there was clear. And, you know, that crew is definitely going to flag that play.
So they had a couple plays on Eli Apple that were soft, too. Like,
yeah, exactly. Yeah, so that to me, that went both ways. I mean, the Kamara one really hurts because that's like 40 yards down the field, and it was fourth and one, where an incomplete pass. So that was maybe the most egregious, and I would give that to Steelers fans. But, you know, I think coming into this game, my big takeaway is that we needed to see the offense respond and play well, and I thought they did. I thought, despite the fact that they really struggled to run the football, and I thought the Steelers did a really good job of stopping the run, you know, there's two drives in particular that really stood out to me. And it's the drive where they get the field goal right before halftime, where Breeze just, you know, gets vertical down the field, makes plays. And then it was the opening drive of the second half, where they go right down the field, and it was 17-14 at the time. And they go down, very impressive drive, get a touchdown. And boom, the Saints are up by 10 points, and they have control of the game. Now, the Steelers ended up coming back from that deficit, but I thought, you know, the Saints scored 31 points. Not only now, they did get some penalties, which were help, but let's not forget there was also an interception thrown in the end zone, which was a terrible pass, and that could have been a scoring drive, and there was a blocked field goal. So, you know, they don't make those two mistakes, and 31 becomes 41, so I thought the offense was back on track, and it was really good to see them, even with all these injuries on the offensive line, get back to form.
Dave, I can't believe I'm saying this, but Ted Ginn is the secret sauce to the Saints offense.
It was nice to have him back, yeah.
He was big. He had five catches, the huge one on third and 20. Like, he's a really important cog. We've been joking about it the last 3 weeks, but, like, the jokes are funny because it's true. Like, he's a big cog in this. But also, am I crazy to think that Kamara finally looked like Kamara after a month of not being his normal self?
Yeah, I mean, he had two touchdowns, over 100 yards all purpose. Rushing and receiving. The last few weeks it did look like he was kind of taken off. He hasn't been his elusive self, you know, there was one play last week or the week before where he had a guy one-on-one in open space and he got tackled. And that's normally the times where Kamara is going to win those matchups and he's going to beat that guy or he's going to jump over him or do something totally crazy and Kamara-like. And we haven't really seen you know, seen a lot of those splash plays, those exciting plays. So it was nice to see him, you know, in his back to a little bit more of his old form. But I still don't know if he's been as amazing as he was earlier this season, those first 4 weeks when Mark Ingram was gone. The other play I liked, Drew Brees, when his pass gets batted up and could possibly have been intercepted, and Drew Brees
third best corner on the team
literally cut through like a knife through the offensive line and jumped up and batted that down. I thought that was a real heads up play that probably a lot of people aren't necessarily talking about. I thought that was an awesome play. There was somebody else. Oh, but yeah, I mean, Ted Ginn, you know, going back to the original question. Yeah. I mean, what was it, Kirkwood who dropped a short pass?
Yes.
I mean that right there, that has been the problem with the young guys. I mean, it's not, I don't think it's that they're not getting open, or that they're not good enough or not fast enough, not getting enough separation. It's just that these last 2, 3, 4 weeks or whatever, they have just not been reliable. They have not been catching the balls that they should be catching, jump balls, whatever, wide open passes like this. I can't believe I'm saying this, but Ted Ginn is the sure-handed receiver that this offense needs.
Well, you know, so it's interesting. I'm glad you asked about this, Ralph. I agree, Dave. And I think the thing that really, I don't know that I appreciated when Ginn was playing versus when he was gone, which was stark and crystal clear to me watching the game on replay just now, but also during the game, but just watching it on replay. He is so wide open on numerous plays. And the reason he's so open is teams are scared to death of his speed. They respect it. And when you're going up against Kirkwood or Tre'Quan Smith, these corners will press, and they're not afraid of their speed. So they don't really respect them, and they'll jam them at the line of scrimmage. And I think those receivers are young, so they probably haven't had the time in the weight room to develop their strength to kind of play against jam corners and figure out how to get open. But like with Ted Ginn, like he would just get cushions where if he wasn't running a deep route, he could just cut off his route and run a 12-yard out, and he would just be wide open. And there wouldn't be a corner within 5 yards of him. And again, I just think people respect his speed and they fear him. And
so here's the thing about Ted Ginn, and you're totally right. Like, teams are petrified of it, Andrew. But I think they're even more petrified of it happening in the dome versus the Saints. Because if the Saints hit you with a 70-yard bomb in your own stadium, that's one thing. They hit you for it in the dome, in a playoff game, in a huge game, like the roof comes off the Superdome, they play Get Crunk, and it just switches everything around. So coaches go into it, and it's even worse. They're even more desperate for it to not happen, whereas in other games, they might be a little bit more like, hey, we'll do a little risky things on defense. Ted Ginn is like at the top of the list. He cannot beat us deep. And I think it's partially the fear of just it's like nitroglycerin or free booze for the Saints fans.
Yeah, I don't think it's an accident that Michael Thomas had his first big game over 100 yards in a few weeks. And I think it has to do also with the alignment defensively. I mean, the safety over the top is playing much further back. They don't want to get beat over the top. And I think that's another Ted Ginn factor where, you know, he stretches the field. You know, the defenses just play the Saints offense differently when Ted Ginn is on the field. And it allowed Michael Thomas to create some matchups underneath that I think normally maybe he gets a little tighter coverage.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, it's just the thing is the Saints, their wide receiving core is sort of like a basketball five, right? They're not all the same. It's like Michael Thomas is the number one guy, but he's more of a possession guy, and he does his thing. And then you have Ted Ginn, and you had Tre'Quan Smith, and that's how they were when they had 2009 to 2011, right? You had Colston was sort of the number one guy, but you had Graham, and then you had Devery Henderson, who was the deep threat and could block, and you had Meacham, who could, you know, they had all these guys that could do certain things, Lance Moore, and that's kind of what they don't have with this group, right? They have Thomas, and they have Ginn as the deep threat, and the other guys, not so great. But I mean, I just look at this.
Kamara is the second best receiver on this team.
Yeah, I mean, here's another question that I have.
And Ingram might be the third best.
is
four times.
It might be. And you know, the thing is, you know, and we get into the nitpicking and all that, and we'll get to that in a second, the questions that we have. By the way, people are emailing me. You would think they watched Seattle last night, and you would think the Saints are the worst 13-2 team in the history of football. They're like petrified of Seattle because they just beat a bad Kansas City defense at home, and they're like, oh my God, Seattle's going to come in. They're going to beat us. But like, this team is so, they are so deep and so good at every position. They have overcome losing Patrick Robinson. They've overcome a ton of offensive line injuries, and this team, to me, it's the most complete team. I mean, I don't necessarily think they have the big playability on the Saints that the 2009 team, because that was just like magical. The turnover spigot just lasted from the first game of the season to the end. And, you know, that's something that's like just happens. You can't really duplicate it. But they've overcome so much. And the thing is, I look at them and they've accomplished everything that they want to. And look, you said it, I think, on the podcast or on Twitter, like the playoffs are a crapshoot, right? Ask the 18-0 Patriots in 2007, man. A dude caught a fucking ball off his head and yep, they didn't win a Super Bowl, right? But
these are the kind of games you're going to get, though. Like, you watch the Steelers game, that's a playoff team. They played a very good team with an elite quarterback. And I mean, I don't care how you feel about Ben Roethlisberger. I think Cam Jordan's wrong. I think Ben Roethlisberger absolutely is a top five quarterback in the league in this era and currently. I mean, he's a very, very good quarterback. He's better than Eli Manning, I think. And, you know, he played an incredible game. He's got incredible receivers in Juju Smith-Schuster and Antonio Brown. And
their tight ends are nice too. McDonald is nice.
Yeah.
Jesse James. They have a really, really good group.
Yeah, and their offensive line is good. And I just thought, listen, this team is much better than the 8-6-1 that they are. They've kind of had some crazy things happen to them this year. The tie, they should have never tied.
They last year, I think they were 12-4, and they were like 6-1 in one score games, and it sort of turned against them this year. Where
yeah.
I think they're either 2-5 or 1-6. In one-score games, like all their losses are one-score losses, and that's just how it goes, right? It just evens out.
This is as tough, in my opinion. Like, they won't face a playoff game that's less tough than this game. I think in the playoffs, like, that's what we should expect. It's going to be games like that.
Well,
and so,
I would say, yeah,
you know, they may face a team that's worse offensively and better defensively, but my point here is like that's the kind of game they're going to be in, the Saints. You know, different teams might have better strengths and worse weaknesses, yeah, or whatever, but if they can win a game like that against a team like that in the dome, to me, that's a good sign. Like that, because that's the kind of game that they're going to have to face in the playoffs. And it may get a little harder. It may not be easier, but I guess my whole point with this is, if you look at this game and they're able to win like that, these are the kind of games they're going to have to win in the playoffs. So they're battle tested.
Well, here's the thing. If the Saints are fortunate, to me, the best case scenario for the Saints in the playoffs is the first game is a blowout because they catch a team that fought their guts out opening wild card weekend. Maybe it went to overtime, right? So the Saints get a blowout that first week. But I would bet a paycheck that the NFC Championship game, whether it's Chicago, whether it's the Rams, whether it's whoever, it's going to be exactly like that Steeler game was yesterday. It's going to be back and forth, and it's going to come down to like three or four plays. And you just better like get ready for it. Because you look at the NFL, when was the last time, Andrew, any team that went to the Super Bowl waltzed to the Super Bowl and had two games that were blowouts? I mean, Atlanta in 2016, I think they beat Seattle by like 7 or 10 the first game, and they crushed Green Bay in the championship. But like, that's the only one. Like, most of the – even New England last year, man, they barely beat Jacksonville at home, you know?
Exactly. I think every playoff game is a crapshoot. And look, these teams are playing for a Super Bowl. So they're going to give it everything they have. And if you are under this mistaken illusion that, like, the Saints should be winning every game 40-7, like, sorry, it's not going to go that way. I guess they're not the 14-2 team that you expect to have, but yeah, all these games are going to be hard. Yeah, I think we should just be glad they're going to be in New Orleans.
Yeah, and I think too, another thing that was underrated yesterday, and first off, I'm glad that the Saints won and Will Lutz got the field goal blocked, because now I don't have to hear the announcer saying that he's made 25 in a row, 20, you know, like he got the record and now he can restart another streak. That'll make me cringe in a playoff game if he was kicking a 34-yard field goal to win and they're like, he's made 34 in a row. I'd be like shitting my pants. So I'm secretly glad that's over. But that aside, the Saints' special teams are by far the best special teams they've ever had under Sean Payton. And it won them the game yesterday because they stuffed the Patriots. I mean, they stuffed the Steelers on that fourth down punt, which you can argue whether Tomlin should or should not have gone for it. The Saints stopped it barely. Thomas Morrison had back-to-back awesome punts. Yeah, the Steelers ended up going 97 yards. It didn't work out. But he's the best punter in football.
That was one of my favorite moments of the game, where he gets it inside the 10, I think about the 8-yard line. And so Tomlin makes it punt it over again. And then he just goes and punts it to the 3 instead. I mean, that was just incredible.
Yeah, and I mean, look, give the Steelers credit. Ben Roethlisberger, they drove down and did it. But I'm telling you, if the Saints are in a playoff game and they're up 14-7 and he drops it down at the 2-yard line and Mitch Trubisky's got to go fucking 98 yards – I'll take my chances if the Saints are in a playoff game and you're like, hey, Thomas Moore said he punts it down there. Mitch Trubisky's got to go 98. You got to keep Mitch Trubisky from going 90 plus yards or you get to the Super Bowl. Like, I'll take my chances every time. And special teams, man, especially.
I just don't think, you know, listen, when you consider the teams that the Saints could play in this first round matchup, Russell Wilson doesn't have nearly the weapons that Roethlisberger has. So yes, Russell Wilson does scare me, but I just don't think he's going to be able to expose the secondary like Ben Roethlisberger was, because he doesn't have the weapons.
And Kansas City's defense is fucking terrible. Their pass rush is very, very good. Everything else on their defense is fucking awful.
Yeah, and so you're saying that Russell Wilson and how he looked in that game is not what you should expect to see in New Orleans. And then, you know, the other two guys, like the Dallas offense or the Chicago offense in the Superdome, I'm sorry, but I just don't think they're going to – the Dak Prescott and Trubisky are not going to deal with this crowd noise and this
Bears,
defense.
Trubisky went very well. Trubisky went 25 of 29 against the 49ers, and the Bears scored 14 points, and they had no turnovers. Like, their offense is an issue for them, especially on the road. And I'm going to tell you another thing. People don't realize this. The corner for Kansas City, I get him confused because he has a similar name to the Bears corner, Kyle Fuller. He might even be his brother. Kansas City's best corner, he was out because he had a hurt wrist. I'm telling you, and people on this podcast, they will spit out whatever they're drinking right now, their eggnog spiked with something special, or you're going to laugh at me, Andrew. But I'm telling you, today, the way Kansas City's defense is, P.J. Williams would be the best corner on Kansas City's team.
Yeah,
like, and that because of injuries and all this. Like, their secondary is fucking atrocious. And I know you got scared because of Seattle, but they played on Monday night. I watched them play Minnesota's defense. He had 74 yards passing, you know?
Yep.
So, I mean, I'm not saying that you don't worry about the playoffs, because playoffs are a crapshoot. But to get all this angst about all these teams, I mean, shit, the Saints are 13-2. Now it comes to the not fun stuff, Andrew. I like documentaries. I love all these documentaries, Ken Burns stuff, and I'm rewatching the Vietnam War one. And I bring that up because the guy who ran the United States Vietnam War strategy, General Westmoreland, he had this crazy theory that, like, if we can just kill enough North Vietnamese, we'll kill so many of them that they'll become a crossover point where they won't be able to replace the troops they have, and we'll win. And granted, it was a dumb theory, whatever, that's Vietnam. But I like that theory because I want to push it to the Saints offensive line. What is the crossover point for the Saints offensive line, or they have so many injuries that it becomes not good enough to get them to a Super Bowl?
Well, I think they've reached their breaking point at tackle. You know, I think they can probably get away with Andres Pete at left tackle or – and by the way, Andres Pete, he played a couple snaps at right tackle until Ramczyk came back in the game. So kudos to him. He played three different positions along the offensive line. I mean, he's become the Senyo Kelemete of the team. But, you know, I think they can – maybe get away with Bushrod at left tackle in the playoffs. Maybe get away with Andres Pete at left tackle in the playoffs. But if they have another tackle injury, you know, another, I mean, hopefully Armstead will be back, although clearly you could see as that game wore on, like he was playing with one arm. I tend to think like Armstead's done. I think he has a torn pec, and I mean, he may try in 2 weeks to give it a go, and I fully expect that he won't be able to finish a game. So I'm kind of reluctantly, I mean, I'm hoping for the best, of course, but reluctantly kind of assuming the Saints are not going to have Armstead for any kind of length of stretch in the playoffs. So I that leaves us with Bushrod and Pete, you know, kind of as the two other guys that can fill in at left tackle. If something happens to both of them, it's or to Ramczyk, you know, if, you know, basically if they're down any more tackles, then I just don't think.
Yeah, and they lost the other. What was the other offensive lineman that they lost that went on IR?
Michael Ola.
Yeah.
Ola. Yeah.
So, and here, look, Sean Payton's playing coy today. He's like, well, I don't know what we're going to do. They're all going to rest. This nonsense of you know, they might play to win. Come on. But here's my question. You only got 53 men and 53 dudes on that roster.
Yeah.
You can't rest all five guys on the offensive line. How can he rest as many guys as he can, Andrew? But you still got to run plays on offense, right? What do you think they're going to do?
Yeah, I mean, I wonder if you maybe cut some guys that, you know, that they've got a lot of receivers on this team, you know, and I just wonder if you cut a guy like Austin Carr, who really hasn't done anything for you the last several weeks, and you pick up a new offensive lineman off the street and you start him. You know, I mean, those are going to be the kind of tough decisions they face this week, because
practice squad dude, be like, hey, practice squad guy, you're on the roster and you're starting.
Yeah,
play your butt off. This is your chance to get you some good tape.
But that's the question: like, do you cut a guy like Tommy Lee Lewis or Austin Carr or, you know, some of these special teams guys that are important to the team? You know, like Washington, you know, or Robinson, you know, some of these, or Beagle, the linebacker, you know, some of these guys like. They're kind of core special teams guys. I don't really want to cut them. And so that's going to be you're basically going to have to make the decision, like, do I play Unger or Warford kind of banged up in this game, or do I cut a guy like Austin Carr and start a guy off the street just so that they don't have to play? That's the biggest challenge. That's the biggest challenge of the 53-man roster.
I would say you do it. I would say you cut. They can cut a couple guys. I mean, the Saints roster, I think it's deep, and I think it's the best roster in the NFL. But let's not kid ourselves. They could cut Austin Carr. They could cut the running back Washington, and if they needed to, and sign a couple dudes and rest everybody on the offensive line. And if somebody wants to claim Austin Carr, I mean, I guess they could have more.
You live with it.
Wide receiver, but like if somebody would claim Washington at running back, like if they need Washington to carry the ball in the playoffs, they're fucked. Like,
right?
You know, like I don't know what else to tell you. You know?
Yeah. So
they'd run Taysom. They'd give the ball to Taysom Hill before they'd give the ball to him.
I mean, honestly, if I'm the Saints, like I don't want DeMario Davis playing. I don't want Cam Jordan playing. I don't want Rankins playing.
Yeah.
I don't want Michael Thomas playing. I don't want Kamara playing. You know, all those guys we just mentioned on the offensive line. Ideally, I'd want five new starters. That's not going to be possible. So you're going to kind of have to pick and choose who plays. But, yeah, it's going to be interesting. I mean, you know, obviously I expect to see Teddy Bridgewater, and I'm kind of excited about that. I'm not going to lie. I know Heinicke, the backup for Heinicke, whatever his name is, the backup for Cam Newton, I know he's injured and he's having an MRI on his elbow. So if he can't go, Carolina may have to start a quarterback off the street.
Allen,
I kind of want to sweep them, A, again, and B, I kind of want Bridgewater to have a great performance. And 14-2 would be the best all-time Saints team in history of the franchise. Because they've gone 13-3 before, but never 14-2. So I kind of want to Bridgewater to have a great game and win this. Obviously, I don't want to risk important players, but I think this is a game the Saints could win, even with some of their B talent.
Yeah, and I mean, the thing I wish the NFL would do, they'd never do it because they care about the competitiveness and all, but I almost wish, like, the last, like, 2 weeks of the year or 3 weeks of the year, they would just let teams expand the roster, because good teams want to rest, and bad teams want to get a look at dudes, you know? Like Buffalo, like, what's, like, wouldn't it benefit them to pull up a couple of dudes off the practice squad and rotate dudes in and out, like, in the third and fourth quarter of an actual NFL game? Because next week, for most teams that aren't in the playoffs, it's beginning of next year, you're looking at guys, you know, but some teams want to win, like Cleveland, they want to have a winning record and stuff, but I just think that would be the way to go. The other thing with this team, man, the Pittsburgh, to me, they gave the declarative statement that not only do teams respect the Saints' run defense, they fear it. Pittsburgh went into the game, was like, nah, brah, no running. Like, they didn't even really – I mean, they had a couple of runs, but they didn't even attempt that shit, Andrew.
Yeah, I think at one point it was 39 passes and 12 runs.
I don't think that would be in the playoffs, because I think the Bears and Seattle would – and Dallas, those teams are so run-heavy, I don't think they would attempt to throw in the Saints. But do you see teams being
well, that's
more respectful?
That's why I know, like, people are shitting their pants, but again, like, that I just love those matchups. I love that Dallas, Seattle, and Chicago are all run first teams. I just mm-hmm. I think at least offensively, they do not match up well against the Saints.
Yeah, I mean, if you take out the Steelers' longest run of 16 yards, they ran 17 times for 49 yards.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah. I don't even really count, like, the runs they hit there, because they're out of the shotgun and the Saints are spread out, you know? So it's not, mm-hmm. it's not even like, you know, they maybe caught the Saints off guard by running on second and 10 with, like, a shotgun inside draw type of play, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's not like your typical North and South, like, I formation, you know, first and 10 run where, you know, the defense is playing it and expecting it. So, you know, you might get a quarterback scramble, or you might get a run like that where maybe you hit it for a gain, but, like, no one can run on the Saints, like, honest, straight up.
Yeah. I mean, and look, they're set up really, I mean, they're set up fantastically for the playoffs. I mean, and look, you're not going to have 100% health, you know. We hate that it's the offensive line, but no team in the NFL, I don't care, the winning teams, whoever, no team goes through a whole season and doesn't have to deal with injuries somewhere, you know. If it was an offensive line,
I mean,
if it was an offensive line for the Saints, it'd be corner.
Yeah. I mean, there's no doubt that the Saints could lose any of these games. I mean, I think, as fans, we all need to be glad that they're in New Orleans. I think we all need to be glad that it's been a fantastic season and that, you know, we've seen a lot of great moments during the season from the offense, the defense, and special teams. You know, there's no hole on this team that is so bad that you have no confidence in it. I have confidence in all three phases, and everyone that listens to this should too. So,
yeah.
Like, the main thing, I think, is – now, they can certainly lose, and anything can happen. And if the question is asked, what is the biggest worry, what is the biggest concern I have, it's definitely the offensive line. Because as you look at these teams, you know, Seattle's good defensively. Dallas and Chicago are exceptional defensively. You really – it's hard – points are going to be hard to come by against those defenses. And you really have to play your best football to make sure you score on them. Now, that's why you want to be at home in the dome against a team like that. But, you know, it just becomes much more difficult when you don't have a healthy Armstead and Ramczyk is compromised. And, you know, Warford's not moving too well because he's got a bum knee. And, you know, those things kind of add up. So, yeah. You know, again, kind of going back to your original question, you know, the offensive line is definitely a concern. And I just really have to hope that these 3 weeks off are going to be enough for the Saints to recover and feel healthy going into this playoff game.
I mean, I think it will, because I just think, like, to me, and you mentioned it, you had great seats yesterday. You said Warford looked like he was just dying. I just think, like, guys like Warford and Ramczyk, like, the 3 weeks they'll get will just be amazing for them, because they're just bodies are just shot, and they just need to not play football. And
yeah,
3 weeks will do that for them. You know, before we get to the prediction for the game, you know, I want to mention again, everybody, look, JLD, we're sponsored by JLD Hot Sauce and Knives. They've been an amazing sponsor this football season, guys. They have the best hot sauce. Their award-winning sauce, Andrew, you should pronounce it for the people.
Boot Jalokia
comes in hot, extra hot, my personal favorite, and Thai flavors. Go to jldsharpsauce.com and use the code SAINT to get 10% off your order today. That's jldsharpsauce.com. You know, the thing is, you look at this, you look at the Saints offensive line, you look at what they've accomplished and what they are or aren't with Armstead. You look at the other things on offense. I just look, and this is what gives me the most confidence in playoffs is, you know, yes, they lost to Minnesota. Yes, they lost to San Francisco in 2011. But the thing is, Drew Brees was getting the shit kicked out of him against San Francisco for a quarter and a half. They had him rattled. Against Minnesota, the Saints didn't have a fucking point at halftime, and Drew Brees still figured it out and was good. And they lost those games. But my point is, like, I don't go into a playoff game, and granted, you say anything is possible. The Saints could lose. I don't see Drew Brees in a playoff game going 12 or 25 for 3 picks. Like, I don't think that's going to happen. Whereas Trubisky, you know, the Nick Foles, even though he's been Super Bowl MVP, he was dreadful in the first Atlanta playoff game last year. And, you know, Dak Prescott, like, they could all suck it up in a playoff game.
Yeah.
And I think,
yeah, they could all turn into a pumpkin. Yep.
Yeah, I don't think Brees may struggle and have a bad game, but it won't be an atrocious game. And the Saints have proven that they can pick it up and carry him and get the win. All right, we don't really have.
I mean,
a line
the Saints have played like 3 opponents in a row that were way more desperate to win than they were, and they still won. And I, you know, again, we talk about good teams find different ways to win. Well, this week the defense, you know, the secondary just didn't play well, and they were beat. They were beat by Antonio Brown. You know, kind of separate, unrelated. Lattimore to me is just not the same player he was last year. I'm going to go ahead and put that out there. I think if I'm a team right now and I'm looking at tape of the Saints, I'm not seeing a huge difference between Lattimore and Eli Apple. You know, I think they're both playing pretty good. Neither of them is a lockdown corner. So I think it's going to be interesting to see in the playoffs if Marshon Lattimore sees more balls come his way. And if he does, you know, this is going to be his opportunity to step up and maybe remind the league of who he is and why he won, you know, Rookie Defensive Player of the Year last year, because Antonio Brown, especially in the second half, kind of had his way with him.
Yeah, I mean, Antonio Brown, the catch he made that didn't count for the touchdown was just – he's just fucking ridiculous. He might be I don't know if you argue that who the best receiver is, but on the that dude is fun to watch scale, I think Antonio Brown's, like, on a different level. Because
he's probably the best receiver in the league, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you know, you know, and he embarrasses a lot of corners. So, you know, you give Lattimore maybe a little bit of a pass there. But I do think, you know, kind of a lot of the talk is maybe Lattimore's gotten a little complacent. And I don't think he's had a great year. I think he's had a good year. But as these playoffs come up, you know, he's going to be, if the Saints play the Cowboys, it'll be him against Amari Cooper, you know, or if we play the Vikings, it's going to be him going up against, you know, Stephon Diggs and Thielen. So he's going to get a chance, I think, in the playoffs to kind of step up and play at a higher level, and he's going to need to. But at the end of the day, you know, again, going back to, I think as fans, we needed to be reminded of how special Drew Brees is and what he can do and what he needs to do in these playoffs to be successful. And I think if you look again at especially those two drives, the first was to get the field goal before halftime. Then the second half drive, they march all the way down, and Breeze was phenomenal on that drive. And then on third and 20, I mean, the throw to Ted Ginn, I know he was wide open, but that was a ball he had to push down the field. You know, there was another throw to the sideline where Ginn doesn't come up with it and ends up incomplete, but Drew Breeze gets flushed out of the pocket. He throws on the dead run, and Ginn kind of slides toward the sideline and tries to make the catch and drops it. It was a tough catch to make, but that was an incredible ball again by Breeze. So in this game, I saw him push the ball down the field in a way that maybe we haven't seen in a couple weeks. And again, I think sometimes when you're not on the road, there's no crowd noise, and you take away the elements of cold weather, rain, a wind, whatever, precipitation, that makes Breeze's life a little bit easier. And I thought he was throwing the ball really well.
Here's a question. Look, we can get into the playoff matchups of you know, we'll do that over the next 2 weeks. You know, we'll have and this is one of the great things about the bye. When you have the bye in the playoffs, the first week of the playoffs, the wild card weekend, is just the best because you're sitting home.
You're watching teams beat each other up.
Yeah.
And if it's a team like Seattle, that's the other thing. They've got to travel across country. Like, think about Seattle just from a scheduling and perspective, like, of just humans having to deal with this. Where, and I know they're professionals, and I know they're used to this, but you know, you're talking about now the 18th, 19th week of the season, and Seattle would have to fly. And where's Seattle going to go? I guess
Dallas.
They're going to go to Dallas. So they're going to have to fly all the way to Dallas, then probably come all the way back home, and then fly out again to come to New Orleans. And yeah, they may just stay out there for a week. I mean, I don't know what their plan would be, but I'm just saying that's significant for a team just in terms of throwing off their schedule. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, the Saints are coming every day into the training room, getting treatment, getting worked on. They don't have to go anywhere. They stay in New Orleans the whole time. They don't have to go. They're in New Orleans until the Super Bowl. And you know, so, and they've been in New Orleans for these past two weeks. So I just think there's an advantage there just in terms of transit, travel time, being used to the facilities, getting in a routine. I mean, and again, it doesn't promise you anything, but it gives you major advantages.
Yeah, and I mean, look, they could – well, I don't think the playoffs, they really try to do it, but, you know, maybe they could even be like Dallas played on – you know, Dallas and Seattle play on a Sunday, and the winner has to come to New Orleans, and the game is Saturday night. So maybe they even get a shorter – you know?
Right.
But my question was going to be to you, not to me pick who you want to play, but – they have a lot of combinations in the NFC, you know. Everything is kind of set as far as 1, 2, 3. Well, Chicago. I mean, I guess the Rams could, in theory, lose to San Francisco, and the Bears could win, and the Rams could drop to 3. But
that's not happening.
As far as 5 and 6, as far as number 6, who do you want in and who do you want out between Philadelphia and Minnesota?
Are those the only two that have a shot at this point?
Yeah.
You know, the whole Foles thing is cute right now. And I know that they're kind of believing again and they have a second win. But to me, Minnesota is more scary. I just think offensively, when you look at Diggs and Thielen, and Cousins is still capable of getting hot. You know, they've got a more sound running game, a better offensive line. And mostly just they're just a more complete team. Defensively, they actually have good players. Philadelphia is just so killed by injuries. And we saw that when the Saints played them. To me, I would much prefer to have to face Philadelphia, even though they're Super Bowl champs and they're riding some momentum. I just think that's a much easier matchup for the Saints than the Vikings are.
So you would want Minnesota out?
Yes.
So I wonder what Chicago is going to do, because Chicago is one game behind the Rams. And they could say, hey, we'll play our starters, and if the Rams lose, we can be the 2 seed. Do we do that, or do we just take the 3 seed? But if they take the 3 seed and they rest, they play Minnesota, so they'd play Minnesota again the next week, most likely, right? So if they rest and they give Minnesota a bye, they play Minnesota again. Do they want to do that? Like, or do you want to, are they like, hey, let's play?
I think Chicago's got to play because, you know, they can't let the Rams think that they're tanking. You know, they've got to keep that pressure on the Rams to let them know, hey, you got to take care of your business because we're going to take this game seriously. And also, I just think they have an opportunity to knock the Vikings out of the playoffs, and that's a rivalry game, and they don't want to face Minnesota again. If they can take care of them now and knock them out, I think they would rather play Philadelphia in the playoffs.
Yeah.
So I think Chicago has to take this game seriously.
Philadelphia, Chicago, Dallas, Seattle would be fantastic first round games. It'd be really fun watching. So, all right, the Saints, they don't have a line on this game in Vegas, but I'm going to say when they announce Bridgewater the starter that the Saints are going to be a 3-point game because Vegas will be like everyone's resting, and even though the Carolina they may be playing Heineken at quarterback or Allen, whoever, we're just going to set it at 3, go. So, what do you think is going to happen in this game, Andrew?
I think it'll be a pick'em game. Because I think they'll say, well, we would favor Carolina by 3 on a neutral field, so we'll make it, you know, kind of a pick'em game. But we'll see. We'll see what the line comes out as. You know, I still Bridgewater will play pretty well. And I think he'll be motivated to show great tape because you know, he's playing for a $20 million in a year contract in this game. You know, much like Matt Flynn got that one game he played against I can't remember who he played against. I think it was the Seattle, right?
The Lions.
Oh, the Lions. Yeah. But he tore it up in that game. That one game got him $60 million over the course of his career. And I think Carolina's just ready to vacation.
Yeah.
Especially with the backup quarterback. They looked awful against the Falcons. So I still feel pretty good. I mean, I think maybe 20-17, maybe low scoring, but Bridgewater makes a couple nice throws, gets a couple touchdowns, and I think the Saints win 20-17.
Here's the thing with Bridgewater too. He's not in the same boat as Matt Flynn. And Matt Flynn, he had one good game and it was all, hey, he might be very good as a quarterback. It was all the contract was all speculation, right? With him, you were buying low or whatever, and getting, you know, Seattle did it, but they had Russell Wilson, so they started him. The thing is with Bridgewater, if Bridgewater came out and was like 19 of 28 for 220 and 2 touchdowns and no picks, like he automatically goes to $20 million because then teams look at him and is like, oh, he's healthy. He already has a history of going to the playoffs and being on a winning team. So the question is, oh.
And he just spent a year learning from Brees.
Yeah. So they're like, oh, he's healthy. He spent a year with Brees. And we have a track record that we know when he's healthy, he's good. I think the Giants would be all over him. So he's going to be really motivated, and it's going to be really fun. He's been dancing after the games. I would like to see him dance during the game. So I'm going to say Saints 31, Carolina 7. Let's just wrap this motherfucker season up on with a bow. Huh, Andrew? Let's just humiliate Carolina with Teddy Bridgewater and just make it the perfect season.
There's a chance
right?
that Bridgewater is going to be a more attractive. Yeah, I'm with you. There's a chance that Bridgewater, if he has a huge game, that he may be more sought after than Nick Foles.
Oh, totally. Because he's young, because he's younger, and Nick Foles is sort of trick or treat. So, all right. So that wraps it up for today, the Christmas Eve episode. Thanks for Dave giving us 15 minutes. Thanks to Andrew. Merry Christmas, everybody. Thanks for supporting the show. Thanks to all the patrons. We love all you guys. We'll see you next week.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
We are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.